Welcome to the 119th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I am a cardiologist and endurance athlete down in Southwest Florida. And as promised, I have Timmeri Hagenberger here again for our monthly, almost, little discussion on excuses. And this week, we're going to talk about I'm not overweight, I'm not unhealthy, there's no reason for me to be plant-based. So that's our excuse. So welcome, Timmeri.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back with you.
Welcome. Long time no speak. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, this happens in my office quite a bit because I'll have a patient come in that's clearly has, you know, disease, and the spouse won't be on board, and they'll even, maybe the patient will even say, well, she doesn't have to, or he doesn't have to, because there's nothing wrong with them. And I kind of look, and it's like, well, maybe nothing wrong yet. And the reality of it is maybe we just don't know. And certainly there are, you know, and then I always kind of throw in, well, there's a lot of things that can happen that, you know, you're not really.
Well, yeah, actually, I have a lot of students that come in because my class is not, it's not in a medical facility, it's in a college. So they come in relatively healthy. A couple students will come to me every semester because they have their own personal health crisis, whether it be diabetes or high blood pressure, but most students think they're invincible. And they come in and just assume that they can eat anything they want. And they're kind of like a little garbage disposal, although we are seeing some changes actually in their health status. But what I like to say, and my husband even echoed this morning when we were talking about it, is that in our society right now, if you're not actively preventing chronic disease, then you're heading right towards it. So you may feel like you're doing fine, but you can't see what's going on, you know, on the inside. And I think people used to be able to kind of look around in the society and base what their decisions about, you know, what to eat and how to move their bodies and even, you know, what to think about when it comes to wellness on people around them, their peers, their grandparents, and you know, their family members. But now our societal norms are just, it's unhealthy, unhealthy, unhealthy everywhere we look. And we can't forget that whatever we eat today basically, you know, becomes us tomorrow. And the tomorrow part is the hard part.
Because that
feel like, I'm okay.
That first 50 kind of sets you up for the second 50, so to speak. And you might go along pretty good on that curve. And then when you start to fall off that curve, you fall off rather quickly.
Yeah. Well, and even when you eat something right now, you may not feel it until a little bit later, you know. And so, but something else that I wanted to ask you about was the whole idea of good numbers. You know, I have students, and just more maybe people that I speak to at VegFest and things like that, and they say, well, my wife has, you know, the cholesterol issues, but mine, I mean, I've got some medication, but I've got it under control, or my blood pressure is normal because I take my medication. So what do you, I tell people that just because they take medication, they're not protecting themselves from disease.
No, and, you know, the majority of physicians, including myself, you know, base their practice on this treating the numbers, whether it's the blood pressure number. We, you know, pat ourselves on the back, and of course our patients say, they'll even say they don't have high blood pressure because they're on medications and their numbers are okay, or their cholesterol, or we'll say you're doing good, you're under control, you know, you come in, you've got a good blood pressure, and people feel relieved that on their medication their blood pressure is okay, and they feel relieved and protected that their cholesterol is okay. But what we're doing is actually just treating the symptom, which is high blood pressure. We're not treating the vascular disease by any way of what the underlying mechanism, and we're not treating what happens with the oxidized cholesterol in the body. So we may, you know, and we know from the studies that you know, maybe it's a little bit better if your blood pressure is normal compared to, you know, if it's the 130 versus 180 over the years, but only a few people really benefit from that. It takes a lot of, you know, a lot of people being on medications before we see anybody being saved from this. And you're certainly not protected. And vascular disease continues to occur. Most people that have heart attacks or have been on blood pressure medicines, a large portion of them have been on cholesterol medications. And even some of the newer cholesterol medications that lower the LDL down very, very low, they're still having events. It may be less, but they're still having events. So, you know, how is that helpful?
Yeah, it sounds like permission to continue making the problem worse, you know, on the with the lifestyle choices. But yeah, they feel like, oh, I can take this medication and so I'm safe.
Yeah, it's and you know, I think sometimes people are even given the alternative, you know, given a choice. It's like, well, you know, you can exercise and lose weight, or we can just give you this medication. You know, so it's like, well, geez, you know, there was a Bill Cosby show that I referred to in my class, you know, where Bill Cosby had to, you know, drop his blood pressure, you know, 20 or 30 points, and he was put on the cholesterol medication, so he had room to spare. So he was eating without regard because, you know, the cholesterol medicine was going to take. It was a spoof, but it's not that far off the mark. You know, so we think we're okay, but the reality of it is we're just, you know, fueling the fire with some of these food choices.
Well, and it makes me think, I had seen Pam Popper from the Wellness Forum Health. She came to Sacramento and spoke a couple of years ago, and someone asked her, if you had a magic wand, what would you wish for? And I always thought about having people, my students, be able to see once they swallow food, you know, what, where it's going and what it's doing. And she said, nope. She said, I would want nerve endings in our artery walls, because people would be writhing in pain on the ground if they really had those nerve endings after eating, you know, some of this artery clogging, pro-inflammatory food, you know, or food-like substances. But we don't have that feedback. So we may even get a little GI upset, you know, after eating a heavy meal, but we don't get that, the true impact in our blood vessels of, you know, the result of what we just ate. And so I thought that was kind of interesting, because we can't really see what's going on the inside.
Yeah. That's what I always tell, and, you know, people that, you know, sorry, you know, when I first went plant-based, I didn't give up cooking oils, you know, because, you know, I was, you know, I used that first excuse a little bit, you know, that, you know, I'm okay, I'm healthy, and my numbers are starting to look good, you know, but luckily it caused, the oils caused, I found out, caused the GI distress in me. So that GI distress is a fantastic deterrent for me to get into cooking oils, because I know I'm gonna feel bad, and I'm gonna need, you know, I don't want to need that medication anymore. So it's a great feedback loop for me, because I recognize that, you know, I have that, you know, I know I'm gonna get sick, so I don't want any part of it.
Right, it makes it easy. People who are lactose intolerant, much easier to talk to them about eliminating the dairy, because they can identify, this does not make me feel good. But even to play in on that too a little bit, I want to talk a little bit about educating ourselves, because we actually came at this, our whole family transitioned, but we were not overweight, and we weren't really, at least my husband and my kids and I, we weren't unhealthy. And so people, you know, often say ignorance is bliss, but I want to be kind of hard-nosed on this and say that it's actually negligence, you know, in this situation. And as Dr. Clapper said very eloquently, your body is always watching, right? So your cells are always watching, and they have to deal with every little morsel that you ingest. I think I've mentioned on the podcast with you before, the potato diet, Andrew Taylor, you know, I'll never forget, he says damage begins as soon as you swallow. So if you do educate yourself and you start thinking about, you know, I showed my students, the Dr. Greger, the nutritionfacts.org, there's a video about how after drinking cow's milk, boys 7 to 9 years old and 19 to 21 year olds, their estrogen levels skyrocket and their testosterone levels drop. And so then it becomes not just, oh, she's vilifying milk, but, oh my gosh, I don't want to ingest estrogen from these pregnant cows, and I don't want my testosterone levels to drop. You know, or like the trans fat that we talk about, and that hydrogenated oils in that process produce trans fat. And so now a student can turn a label over, you know, turn the package over, look at the ingredient list, and if there's hydrogenated fat in there, they can say thank you, but no thank you. It becomes much easier to avoid those foods because you've educated yourself about what's really in them.
Yeah, I just, this brings up a good, there is a Facebook post that's being passed around about a guy looking at the cereal box. I don't know if you've seen it. I think it's Cinnamon Crunch or something like that. And he circles the one toxin that's involved in, you know, paint thinner as well, you know, and it's in this, it's in the cereal. And he's all beside, you know, he's all in an uproar because there's this chemical in the cereal that, and it's in Fruit Loops and, all, you know, all the commercial cereal for kids. And he can't believe that this toxin would be in there. And, you know, I'm giggling to myself. It's like there's nothing that's not a toxin in there. You know, that that chemical is just, you know, I mean, it's one, but the, you know, the biggest thing that, you know, there's no nutrients in there. Forget about, you know, that the whole thing's a toxin. And it, you know, it's an outrage about how could they put this in, you know, cereal, but it's like, well, how could you eat the cereal? So it's what we stop to focus, you know, we turn our attention on and we don't focus. I mean, it's great if people won't eat the cereal because that toxin's in, but you know what'll happen if there's enough outroar, that particular toxin may go away, but it's not going to change the basis for cereal.
Then it's going to look like, oh, this is the toxin-free version.
Yeah.
Well, it's not really toxin-free. It's just not, it doesn't have that one in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, the same way with fish, you know, I try to point out that, you know, I mean, fish, you know, again, the fish is the middle guy. It you know, it got all those omega-3s from what it ate. And then, but it also got all the toxins in the ocean, in the lakes, the dioxins, the runoff from factory farming, the PCBs, the, you know, the herbicides, the plastics, the mercury, the lead, and then you're eating that fish. You know,
the antibiotics,
you know, so the antibiotics in the, you know, in the cows, actually 70% of the antibiotics produced in this country go to factory farm animals,
that are not sick,
just to keep them from getting sick because they're raised in such cluttered conditions. And, you know, it's causing the emergence of these superbugs. You know, the Mother Nature is much smarter than the chemical companies. And, you know, if you give one chemical, they're just, you know, it's the Mother Nature will produce enough to, you know, they're selecting for stronger antibiotics. And so that when people come into the hospital, antibiotics don't work for routine things. And not only that, as we're selecting out for these superbugs, you know, that in the gut flora, that's really, really damaging. So people can get really sick really quick with relatively minor things.
Right. Back to when we didn't have, you know, use antibiotics. And yeah, very scary. I wanted to say something about, I'm working with a student to write an article for this month who came into my class totally healthy, no weight issues. He's 28. And he had no interest necessarily in changing his diet. He's always really liked to cook, and he grew up in a Portuguese family with grandparents, and his dad actually cooked quite a bit. And so he did this 21-day kickstart, and he actually made it a 40-day because he did it for Lent. And he was amazed by how good he felt. And, you know, he basically said, I had no idea that I was just kind of building up a tolerance to feeling kind of crummy. He actually said he wouldn't eat breakfast. And he said, but now, you know, I'm eating breakfast. And I said, well, wait, you got to talk to me more about that. And he said, well, you know, I'd eat a really kind of heavy dinner, and that was normal. And he said, I kind of would be in a food coma, and then I'd go to sleep, and I'd wake up, and I would have no appetite. I would just feel sluggish. He said, I'd drink coffee until about noon, and then I'd have lunch. He said, but I didn't really think anything of it. You know, I wasn't overweight, and, you know, I didn't think there was any issue with it. He said, but now, he said, I eat. I don't feel bloated. I feel like doing whatever I want to do until sun goes down and beyond. He said, and then in the morning, I wake up. I'm looking for, I'm either going to jump out the door and run, he said, or I'm going to grab the dog and walk the dog. He said, and then I'm hungry for breakfast, but hungry in a good way, you know, just like my body's, and he said, no more of the coffee. I don't bother with energy drinks. You know, I have no need for them. So I thought that that was an interesting take on it, because he really didn't have any idea that he wasn't doing great.
Yeah.
He just kind of felt like this is normal, you know, and he, and I have students, it's funny, I'll have students who say, after class, I have to go home and take a nap. I always just look at them and go, oh, a nap. I dream about those, but I never get there. And you know, they said they were just so, they wouldn't even think twice about it. They were so tired. They'd go home and then they change their diet. And then all, they're like, oh my gosh, I don't need to go take a nap. I can, you know, go and do other things. And they just all of a sudden have more time in their life and their day because of that boost of energy, you know, related to changing, you know, what they're eating. And you mentioned the gut issue. That whole thing about 90% of the serotonin is made in our gut. I know that's a topic we can talk about another day, but, you know, how do people feel after they eat and all the time? I mean, are they just kind of surviving or are they feeling good and, you know, like $1 million?
Yeah, it's funny. You know, you have students that are, you know, otherwise healthy at this point because most of them are in the age group that they, you know, they still have some room to abuse themselves. But my approach is a little bit different because when people come in and they think they feel good, I start talking about, you know, I'm like the card reader, you know, or the, you know, I tell them what their future is or I tell them what happens to them every afternoon. It's like about 3 or 4 o'clock, you have a low. And you feel like you could just take a nap, right? And they look at me, it's like, you know, how did you know? You know, and you know, and describe these things. And it's like, yeah, about, you know, before lunch, you start to feel, you know, you feel bad. Or, you know, you know, people will have these almost near syncable episodes because, you know, after a really heavy meal, because they, you know, have such a high fat intake. And when I say this, you know, this'll change. And it's like, really, you know, and I said, you know, give it a shot. And people notice it very quickly that, you know, that those lows, you know, don't go away because when you eat a high fat meal, it just doesn't, you know, it takes, you know, the better part of 12, 24 hours to kind of get that through your system. So if you, you know, I think Dr. Greger also showed a study on that. You know, so if you were to have fruit the next morning or something sugary, you're going to get twice the insulin spike because you still had this stuff laying around and you had this insulin resistance from the night before with this fat meal. So it kind of continues to haunt you into the next day. And that's why the kid didn't want the breakfast because he's still being affected by that night before's fat meal.
Right. And then how we talk about the beans and the second meal effect. You know, and that is just phenomenal how Greger talks about that, where you can eat the bean burrito and the next day you can basically drink straight glucose and see a lower spike, you know, in blood sugar. So there is that lingering, that effect of the food that we're eating. So it's either going to be a good effect or, you know, a negative one. The something else that I wanted to share about Brad, which was the student that was working with me, the idea that the beans and his grandmother was, a great grandmother, made these Portuguese beans, and he said that they were always reserved for like his birthday, and they had, you know, like a special church potluck kind of picnic barbecue. And he said now he figured out, because they had bacon in it, and then the bacon grease was used to, you know, cook up the vegetables, the onions and the garlic and the spices. And so he was really excited to play around with the recipe and to make it, you know, a plant-based whole food version. And it came out so good. And he realized, he said, I can eat these all the time now. You know, these can go from, oh, it's only a special food, you know, that we only, we know it's heavy and we only, you know, quote unquote, poison our bodies, you know, a couple times a year, to, I can eat this food all the time. This can be a weekly staple. You can really eat the food that loves you back. I mean, these are the foods that you grew up with, but in a way that is so good for you that they'll actually promote your health. Instead of just taking, oh, I can't make that because it had bacon in it, you know, or I can't eat that anymore. You and I both spend a lot of time with students and patients and showing them in the kitchen how they can make versions of these foods and then enjoy them all the time.
Yeah, eggplant bacon comes to mind. I brought that up in class last week and a couple of people made it and they were just amazed. And, you know, so you like that BLT, you know, it doesn't have to go away. Just use, you know, eggplant bacon, you know, to make it. Is it, you know, is the grease running down your chin the same way? No, but that flavor is still very much there and the texture's there. So it's great. On the other flip side of that, you know, as far as having what you like all the time, the other excuse that I get from my end is, well, we never have that very often. You know, it's like, because mm-hmm. I'll say, you know, again, what did you have for dinner last night? And they'll say, you know, oh, well, we never eat that very often. You know, it was, you know, a steak, or it was, you know, some sort of Alfredo sauce with all kinds of butter. We never eat that. And but then I'll ask another meal and they'll say, well, we never eat that very often.
And I know.
Yeah, so it comes out to be, you know, in a week there were four different we don't eat very often things, but they're all four different different bad things. You know, yeah. So people don't realize, you know, it's like, yeah, sure, you might not have the Dairy Queen Blizzard but once a month, but, you know, you may have Cheesecake Factory, you know, and then you may have, you know, it can go on and on and on, and it all adds up, and you don't realize it because it's, you know, some other different type of deal.
Right.
You know, so I think it is important to find, you know, because if you can get away from that, those things, then, you know, again, you start to really enjoy the eggplant bacon or the, you know, healthy zucchini pumpkin bread that's on your site. Or I just found a recipe for like a chickpea chocolate chip cookie that, you know, much better without any oil for the once in a while things. You know, you can dial things back, or the oatmeal or the homemade granola without the oil. You know, so there's a lot of things that people start to really, really enjoy and look forward to. I mean,
absolutely. The pizza, I have that thin crust kale pizza, and I have a student who, she took my class a couple of years ago. Every Friday is Pizza Friday, and it's that pizza, and they love it every single time. You know, and it could easily, before, it could have been the cheesy, pepperoni-laden pizza that they regretted, and now it's just reinvented, but they absolutely love it, and they can enjoy it without any worry. And it actually is, you know, makes them healthier, you know, after they eat it. So that's fun when you feel like, because then you don't feel like you have to even be tempted to, quote unquote, cheat, because it doesn't feel good, but you're not missing out because you have wonderful food that fills you up and, you know, and it has you feeling good beyond, well beyond the meal, not just when you stop chewing.
So we talked about people being, you know, physically, not really realizing how bad they actually felt. You know, again, people, the norm, if, you know, and, you know, you're most like the five people that you hang out with for the most, you know, I think the study is pretty close to that. So if you're hanging out with people that, you know, are very sedentary and you eat and everybody just sits around, you may actually not realize, you know, how bad you feel. But, you know, there's also an emotional component to all this as well. You know, people start to be very sluggish and, you know, I think there's some negativity that goes, mental clarity goes, you know, and then there's these feedback loops that, you know, one thing leads to another. If you don't mentally feel well, then you're less likely to be active. You know, and it just becomes a vicious cycle. It'd be very and it's very difficult to get out of.
It is, especially when you don't change the food piece, because as we've talked about with the whole bacteria, you know, and the serotonin and all of that that's made in our gut, if you don't change that, then you're going to trust all the thoughts in your head, even though they're negative. And you're right, you can't get out of that loop. You know, it's like the best thing that someone can do who's depressed, for most people, is to get outside and take a walk and get the fresh air and get blood, you know, moving, and fill your body with foods that are going to be producing, you know, the compounds that are going to help, you know, with optimal blood flow in the brain and neurotransmitter production. But it's, you got to get out, you have to see that window, you know, and get out of there. And the idea of acting as if you are a healthy version of you, rather than waiting for that to happen, you know, waiting for it. It's, you know, if I want to be a professional, you know, I don't know, plumber, then I need to start acting like it, you know. Mm-hmm. And I know plumber seems like a random thing, but I was listening to another podcast, and the person was talking about, you can't wait to be inspired. If, you know, you call up a plumber and you need, you know, because your pipes are broken, and the plumber goes, you know, I'm just not feeling like plumbing today. Maybe next week I'll feel like it. No, that doesn't work. You do it whether it's raining, whether you feel like it or not. Otherwise, you'll be out of, you know, a job. So if our job, which it is, you know, is to become the best version of us, then whether we feel like it or not, we do the things, we set up the habits that make us feel good, because in the end, the feedback loop can be turned around as positive, not only negative. Because then I have students who say, oh gosh, when I eat well, I feel like going to the gym. I don't want to put any of that garbage in my body. I, you know, want to connect with my friends. I don't hesitate about going, you know, and doing fun things. And I don't feel self-conscious. I feel confident, you know, and all those things. And so we can have that positive feedback loop that works, you know, just as effectively.
Let me ask you a question, and you know, it may be that I'm just crazy, but I'll probably going to pull you right into it being crazy too then. So when you see something, you know, I'm drawn to people that do things that, well, they're motivating to me. You know, whether it's a podcast or a story, or, you know, if I read something, for instance, there's a site I follow on Instagram called Gymnastic Bodies. And these guys do some wild and crazy, you know, poses, and, you know, they're amazingly flexible. You know, and then I, you know, I'll read a running magazine where I'll see someone that's, you know, the 75-year-old that broke a, you know, some fast record, or someone that's lost a limb, and, you know, you know where I'm going with this, that, you know, you know, done something. And immediately, especially like even with the gymnastic bodies, and as crazy it is, I my last gymnastics class was at, you know, probably age 8 or 9. You know, I wasn't the gymnastic type by any stretch of the imagination. But I start thinking about, you know, what if I could do that, or the yogi bodies when they do a pose. And I start thinking about, you know, or can I run the, you know, I've had many marathons go awry because I thought I was a Kenyan, you know, or I'm trying to emulate that. And I'm highly motivated by, you know, it's like, I think I can, or I think I should at least try to do that, versus someone that's in a similar setting that's like, well, those people are just idiots. So how do you, when you see that, what do you think? They're just idiots, or they're something, they're freaks of nature, or, you know, I might want to try a version of that.
Oh, I'm the third. I say, wow, that's possible. Maybe. You know, I think I'm totally motivated by that. And sometimes I'm not even motivated by it for myself, but I would be motivated for my students to do this. Like, 'cause some of the stuff I think, oh my gosh, I'm probably not, that's probably not going to be me. But look at what the human spirit and body can endure, and what it can do, and it absolutely Absolutely motivates me. Even if, but I don't do it like, oh, if I don't get there, then I have failed. I just look at it like, wow, what kind of, look at the potential that we have. And it does help me push through wherever I am. You know, if I'm going out on a run and I'm by myself and so I may be going slower than I would maybe with a friend, then I think about, I can do this. I can do better. Look what people can do. They're trying to break the 2-hour marathon. And that's not going to be me. But wow, if that is in the range of human possibility, then I can definitely upgrade my effort.
Yeah, I never see, you know, I mean, and maybe as unrealistic as it is, you know, you read about, you know, the curves of, and I know when I first started doing marathons, you know, there's a talk about, you know, you get so good and then you level off and then, you know, you wait for that age thing to kick in and then your times start to slow down. And, you know, I still consider myself on the upward slope. I won't give in to saying that, you know, it's not possible to go faster. You know, whether I achieve it on a regular basis or not, you know, is, you know, there's a lot of variables into that, but I'm not willing to not put myself in that potential category and accept that, you know, there's not a possibility of it. And I think I mean, I know that, you know, I may never happen, but it's still worth a shot to me. And I just kind of find it funny because then sometimes I giggle to myself and it's, you know, again, it's like, well, you know, what are you nuts? You know, it's like, why would you even try to do something like, you know, one of those poses you may very well kill yourself in the process, but it's like, well, you try a version of it, you know, but on the other hand, you know, you see people that they don't want to. And I think one is they just don't feel well. And two, the people that are around them, they haven't seen, you know, some of that. You know, it goes back to when I'm at a marathon and I see there's such positivity and people are doing some incredible things. And you see that, you know, incredible things, whether somebody has lost a limb or they're just, you know, fast speed or whatever, you know, or somebody that's older that's done something. And yet I see the same age people in my office that don't even think it would be possible to run around the block because they've never been around anybody like that.
Oh, absolutely. I have students who do, for extra credit, they'll do like their first 5K. Never been to one ever before. And even if it's just to finish, you know, just to walk it, and they come back like, wow, the energy was just amazing. I've never been in that environment where people of all different shapes and sizes and ages were all out there, you know, for a specific cause. You know, if it's one, most of them are fundraisers. But just that idea that we're all getting out there and moving and walking, and that was normal. But there was so much, it felt so good to be surrounded by people who were doing that. And they had never had that experience before. So all of a sudden their norm, like that's what we were talking about earlier in the podcast, how the societal norms. If it was normal for every single Saturday for there to be a 5K in your neighborhood, then you wouldn't think twice about it. You'd be doing the 5K. And just like you and I have made it our norm to do our long run on Saturday, then we don't think twice about it. That's our norm. And we hang out with people who, you know, we do have our running friends that do that, and we don't question it. So it is, it's, you know, you were saying about the five people that are closest to you. I specifically brought that up before the end of the semester this year. And I said, you know, it's really interesting to think about where you want to be and who you're surrounding yourself with. Ideas in mind that we want to go to school, we want to get a degree, we want to get a job, then it makes it harder for them to have confidence, you know, and to kind of feel like I can put myself out there in that, even though I'm not sure exactly what to do, I think it'll be okay and it's worth striving for. And it's not out of the question. Like you were saying, you know, you can hope. And, you know, that idea that they do have a chance, but it's based on you look around and go, well, am I the only one? But if you're surrounded by people who are doing it at different levels, then it does become possible. And what, you know, we are, if we think we can do it or we think we can't, we're right.
Yeah,
I think that comes back.
And I think that's, you know, again, it helps a lot with your students, and you have the 21-day challenge, and you have your group that meet, and, you know, you do your the potlucks, you know, and the nutrition class where people meet each other, and there's the support, because you kind of change those five people around you a little bit. So you do see some difference and some potential as opposed to that same old, same old.
Well, and that's where, like, the podcast and the meetup groups, you know, because people could be listening that are not in either of our areas, of course, and so they don't necessarily, they can't come in and take Nutrition 300, and they're not going to be able to come into your classes. But hearing us on the phone, you know, doing the podcast, that idea that this is normal, and then there's so many of us now that are saying this is our normal, and that the more they reach out to people in their community and start up meetup groups or attend those kinds of events, or just go next door and say, hey, do you have any interest in taking a walk on Saturday? Let's walk down to the farmer's market and let's get some food. Do you want to experiment with a little cook together? And we've never cooked with, you know, a daikon radish, so let's look up a recipe and play with it. And if it's not any good, then we'll, you know, we'll try a new recipe. But if it's great, we'll celebrate. You know, so that's something very doable for people, but to start to make those connections, because it feels great. That it's true. My students that are in my top group, they just love connecting. You can just feel that see their little shoulders drop when they walk in, you know, to our room, whether we have a demo or a potluck. We had one today, and they get this relaxed, like, this is my people. But they're all different ages. They're all different ethnicities. They're all different places in life. But they connect on this level of being, you know, vigilant about what the food, you know, the foods that they choose going into their body. And it's our normal, you know, in that area. So within those walls.
And then I guess, you know, if you look about, you know, we were talking earlier about your student who was carrying the McDonald's bag in. You know, we assume that those kind of foods are cheaper. And there's a big excuse around that, you know, people can't afford, you know, plant-based foods. And of course, that, you know, McDonald's, if they weren't so subsidized, there's a great book called Meatonomics, I believe it is, you know, that talks about really the reality of a, you know, a burger from McDonald's is probably about $30 when you take into all the things that go into that with the subsidies and, of course, all the ill health effects and all that kind of stuff down the road. But even if you just look at the face value of things like that, you can still beat them on a plant-based diet pretty easy with a little bit of planning.
Oh, yeah, and we did that as a whole separate. You and I did that as a podcast. It's too expensive to, you know, eat well. And so they can go back and listen to that episode. That was, we got into that in deep. But something we didn't talk about, which I've just become aware of, is there's new companies like this one. It's called Health IQ, where people are actually saving money on life insurance premiums because of health decisions being plant-based is one of their criteria, or they have for different sports. They'll recognize the fact that people who exercise on a regular basis are at lower risk of dying, and so your premiums will reflect that, which I thought was really great, because that's part of the whole risk, you know, grouping for the insurance. But to actually have be credited, so to speak, you know, where it actually affects the bottom line in your bank account by making these choices. And it's easy for them to make the arguments. They cite all this research about how, you know, these choices are impacting the bottom line for them with death rates. It's pretty encouraging to see that.
Yeah, it's you know, it's motivating for people, you know. So it's, you know, again, it just makes it makes it all a little bit better.
Definitely. And I would love to end on a point about health span versus lifespan. you know, my students come in saying, well, aren't we living longer now? You know, I've heard that the, you know, lifespan is increasing. And what I talk to them about is that people may be living a little longer, but when you really look at those years and the quality of those years, they're getting sicker earlier and they're sicker, you know, as far as the acuity of it, you know, the intensity of that. And when, you know, when we're well, we don't think twice about it. You can do anything. Your body's not holding you back. Basically, anything you want to do, your body's going to get you there. But when you're sick, especially with chronic disease, and as you know very well, your body can become almost like a prison. And I know this seems extreme, but I have my parents' friends, some of them are basically shackled to their closest medical facilities. They can't easily plan vacations if they're on dialysis. They can't be too far from the hospital or, you know, the doctor's offices. Oh my gosh, I have to share this with you. And this ties into the saving money. I was at a conference, and we'll have to talk about that on a separate podcast, but with a friend of mine who works with elderly patients, and she said that they were in a group. It was a weight loss group or a diabetes group, and one of the guys was a financial planner. And so something came up about how much money do you really have to retire, have set aside. And he had a really interesting answer. He said, it entirely depends on your muscle strength. And people looked at him and said, what do you mean? He said, if you are weak and you cannot get yourself off the toilet, then it's going to cost you a lot. He said, because you're going to have to pay someone to help you into the bathroom. He said, if you're really deconditioned, you're going to have to pay for the room in the nursing home that's closer to the nurse's station. And, you know, all the different things that we don't think about, that when we lose our ability to take care of ourselves, when it comes to financially, that, you know, is much more expensive to have 24-hour care than to have someone that has to just pop in on us once a week, you know, to make sure everything is going well. But he said, so you have to remember that how strong you are and how healthy you are is ultimately going to impact how much money it's going to cost for you to age, if you obviously make it that far. But I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, that is very interesting. And of course, we know that people that are on a plant-based diet lose muscle mass and bone mass less quickly than people that are animal-based. And I'll make a little plug for my mother ending on that, because a couple podcasts ago, I shared that she had some health issues and had to have a pacemaker and was, a little bit down as far as she wasn't able to golf and go to Zumba for about a month. And she's very, she wears her watch with the steps. And, she was always, trying to get her 10,000 steps in, at 84 and, with the Zumba and all that kind of stuff she was getting. But she wasn't getting her steps and she was really worried about it. But she started to feel better. And she actually signed her up for cardiac rehab so that she kind of could be in a monitored environment and get back into shape a little bit. And so she went, and she was quite pleased with what she did, and she wasn't even sore the next day, which I thought was remarkable, because she had done some things, with the arms and weights that she wasn't used to doing even before, but she wasn't sore the next day. But then she went out, her buddies invited her down to maybe just ride around the cart and, get some fresh air and maybe putt or, maybe even play a couple holes. And she came back and she says, well, I played 9 holes.
And then
2 days ago, over the weekend, I look out and I see her walk and she's trying to get her steps back up again. And then she comes home on Tuesday and she played 18. And not only did she, play 18 holes of golf when she was going to maybe play 9, but she beat everybody. So she's 84 and she shot an 80. And so she fired, she officially declared herself a graduate of cardiac rehab now. So,
wow.
So I think, so it goes to show, how, you get, if your muscle tone is good and you keep, in shape, you can have some setbacks, but you can bounce back pretty quick from them. So, after, I thought it was pretty good after a four-week layoff from Zumba and golf. She's back to 18 holes in her steps and is back signed up for Zumba.
Wow, that's fantastic. Yeah, that speaks volumes.
So keep it up, eat your plants, and we shall reconvene next time. And the next session we'll be talking about...
I knew you were going to ask me about that. What about picky eaters? I don't like new foods. That's a very common excuse. We're going to tackle that one next time.
All right. Until next time, eat your vegetables, move your body, keep strong, and keep positive. How about that?
Sounds great.
All right. Have a good evening.
You too.
I hope you enjoyed the little chat I had with Tim Marie. I certainly enjoy our chats together. If you have any questions for Tim Marie, you can email her at thenutritionprofessor.com. She has a great book that you can pick up on her website or on Amazon or any of your local bookstores, perhaps called The Foodie's Bar Way. It's an excellent cookbook. It has something in there for everybody. It has some great recipes when if you're thinking about how, you know, how do you do toppings or sauces or things like that without oil. It's a great resource, and it's always also a great resource when you're you have multiple different personalities and different tastes in your household, and it's a way to get something for everybody. So look for her at thenutritionprofessor.com. You can email me at jamiedelaney@gmail.com or jamie@drdelaney.com. My website is drdelaney.com, spelled out drdelaney.com. Love to hear from you. You can follow me on Instagram at Jamila Delaney. And until next time, I hope you have a great week. Eat your vegetables, get out and move your body, and think positive.